Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello and welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. Now, this is a show about what matters most in life. Our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I will bring you the latest research about why people often make unrealistic plans that are doomed to fail. Then I'll speak to Dr. Paul Leslie. He's a psychotherapist and an author of several books in How to Live a Magical Life. That's what we're going to talk about. Now, be sure to subscribe to my podcast and YouTube channel and social media. I'm on Twitter, Dr. Zain, and Instagram, Dr. Fujian Zain. I really want to hear from you. So send me a note. Send me a message, topics you want us to talk about, if you have questions that you want me to answer. And I've got good stuff for you. If you send it, then I will give you some prize, my CDs and things that I can probably offer you, like books and CDs. I have all of them available. So connect with me. We will be right back with the tip of the week.
Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zain. For all of you who are interested in changing something in your life, or shifting a new career, or bettering your intimate relationship, or, you know, it's just time to take care of you, but you really don't have time to take off from your busy day, or you're just too far away from my Beverly Hills or San Clemente office, I have a great offer for you. I'm only offering this time-limited package to you. For online therapy, if you are living in the state of California, or online coaching wherever you live around the world. Now listen, a 10-week package with a $500 discount. Call me to schedule your appointment, 818-648-2140, 818-648-2140, or go to Fujian.com, F-O-O-J-A-N.com for more information. It's time to take care of you. Because you are worth it.
This week, I've been working with the concept of having a very positive intention, which turns ugly as it gets delivered with the need to control or feeling of anger and rage or envy. I'm sure you've been witnessing that in the realm of politics, on television this past week. I've also seen it with people communicating ineffectively at work, with family, and in their intimate relationship. This happens usually when there are multiple processes at hand, all at the same time, combining a solid and positive intention with a negative judgment and an unfulfilled expectation will create a volatile expression, which the receiver will not only not gain your love and caring and all the positive intentions, but instead will feel judged and violated. So when has it happened to you? Have you ever wanted to communicate something beautiful and yet at the end of the conversation you saw yourself angry and the other person could not wait to get away from you? Have you been the receiver of someone talking to you in an angry and judgmental tone while trying to tell you how much they care for you? How does that land on you? So I'm sure every parent has experienced combining love and anxiety and super amount of high expectations while they wanted to talk to their children about coming home earlier or doing their homework or becoming excellent in something, where it has turned out to be a shouting match instead of the child feeling the love and getting the point of the discussion as a positive concept. Now, everyone in an intimate relationship or marriage has probably experienced combining love and fear of loss of rejection, resulting in their communication becoming a fight, where information has been withheld in order not to hurt the other person, while each feels more separated, unfulfilled, and not heard. Or that they want to receive love but talk in a complaining tone and blame the other person for not fulfilling their expectation, resulting and the partner feeling shame, incompetent, and hopeless about ever getting acknowledged and retrieving more internally. It's so important to be aware of your internal process, distinguishing them between your intentions, your judgments, your fears, and expectation. When you know what your message is from each of these realms, knowing what it is that you expect, knowing what it is that you want, knowing what it is that you kind of like, don't like, and there's your judgments, and what it is that you really, really intend to create at the end. Distinguishing between them, knowing them really, really helps. When you know what your message is from each of these realms, then you can communicate clearly, stating what your intentions are, owning your judgments and fears, and sharing your expectations and requests. Now, this way of clear communication will have a clear impact on the person you're trying to communicate. So, since they can also become aware of their own reactions or responses to each one of those areas that you're talking about. So, for example, you know when you want to tell your child something or you want to tell your mate something, and you know you love them, you want them to know you care for them, and at the end, you actually want to be listened to and cared for and connected to, but sometimes you're angry, and your anger and your own hurt and everything else shows up in the middle. So how it turns out to be is that you might complain, you might share your anxiety and anger, you might say all of those first and shut down the person's listening, and they won't even listen to you. And at that time, they don't get that you love them and care for them. They don't get that you want to be close to them. And certainly at the end of it, they don't want to be close to you. So when you have experienced these things, it's important for you to know where that's coming from. And it's important for you to communicate clearly what it is. And maybe you can let them know the intention of the conversation, that I want to share with you something. And at the end of the conversation, I like us to be closer. I like to understand you and I want you to understand me. So share the intention of the conversation first, and then share maybe what it is you're angry about, but in a way that you can own it. Like, I'm angry about this, or I'm afraid of this, or I'm anxious about this, and these are the things I've seen. And so it's not necessarily to blame the person, but it's like, this is my perception, this is what I've seen, which we call it I statements. But it's not just a statement, it's more like owning what it is that you are perceiving and seeing and making meaning of. And then so you can say that. And then at the end, say, what do your request is? From here on, this is what I really like. So instead of just kind of like, you know, going through the drag of complaining and telling them all the way they're bad and wrong and they should never do it again, maybe if we landed with an appropriate request, and they get the choice to be able to do it or not, but at least they won't be like suffocating under all of that blame and not having the ability to see you. And maybe if you say it that way, they also can own what part of it they maybe did wrong or unintentionally, and they can come through for you. So communicate clearly. No one really knows what's going on in that head of yours except you. And no one is really responsible in a way that you're communicating but you. So if you're not communicating clearly, guess what? You got to learn and put it out there clearly, because you want the return. You really would like people to hear you and also be able to give you what you want, especially closeness and friendship. All right. Talk to you soon about the latest research.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com. KMET Banning.
Here we are, everyone. Latest research. Research led by scientists at Queen Mary University of London has provided new insights into why people often make unrealistic plans that are doomed to fail. The study published in journal Behavioral Brain Research analyzed the complex relationship between reward and effort in achieving goals and identified two critical stages in the decision-making process. The researchers found that when people first decide what to do, they're motivated by rewards. However, once they begin to put plans into action, their focus turns to the difficulty of the effort they need to put in. I'm sure you've experienced that. They suggest the key to achievable aims is to consider the effort needed when deciding what to do, and then remembering to focus on the rewards once the time comes to put in the effort. To investigate the relationship between effort and reward, the research team designed experiments involving two different forms of effort, physical and mental. Physical effort was measured by the action of squeezing a joystick, whilst the ability for participants to solve simple mathematical equation tested mental effort. Study participants were presented with different options that combine either high or low effort with high or low financial reward and asked to select which one to pursue. The scientists found that when selecting options, participants were guided by the level of financial reward offered. But on execution of the task, their performance was determined by the actual amount of effort they needed to exert. The team observed that the results were similar for both the physical and mental effort-based experiments. Common sense suggests that the amount of effort we put into a task directly relates to the level of reward we expect in return. However, building psychological and economic evidence indicates that often high rewards are not enough to ensure people put in the effort they need to achieve their targets. They have found that there isn't a direct relationship between the amount of reward that is at stake and the amount of effort people actually put in. This is because when we make the choice about what effort to put in, we're motivated by the reward we expect to get back. But at the point in which we come to actually do what we had said we were going to do, we focus on the level of effort we have to actually put in rather than the rewards we hoped we would get. If we're not careful, our plans can be informed by unrealistic expectations because we pay too much attention to the rewards. Then, when we face the reality of our choices, we realize the effort is too much, and then we just give up. For example, getting up early to exercise for a new healthy lifestyle might seem like a good choice when we decide on our New Year's resolution, but once your alarm goes off on a cold January morning, the rewards aren't enough to get you up and out of the bed. January morning, this happens every single day. The night before, I'm like, I'm getting up, going on the Peloton, I'm doing this. Every morning, I'm like, oh, do I really have to? I've been actually good for a week. I have to confess, I have actually been good for the week. But you can definitely sense where when it gets to the effort, when the rubber meets the road, is when we actually have to do it. We keep pushing it back, and it just doesn't seem like the reward is there. But so there's two ways based on this research to look at this. One is when we're actually setting up the goal to have some realistic concepts of what it takes to do that and the effort that it takes to do that and how we can build up to that effort. And is the reward really to us worth the effort that we're going to put in or not? And then put that as a goal and then systematize the goal as we're going forward. So that's one of the concepts. The other concept that I'm hearing from them, which is helpful, is that right when it gets really difficult when we're doing taking care of ourselves and wanting to do the effort, is constantly bring back the reward images and when we're going to get to, because that hopefully is going to motivate us pulling through and moving forward. So, all right, I hope that helped. So I'm excited to have Dr. Paul Leslie with us. She is a psychotherapist, researcher, trainer, and author in Aiken, South Carolina. He specializes in resource-directed approaches to working with individuals and families. Paul is a licensed therapist in the state of Georgia and South Carolina and a national board-certified fellow in hypnotherapy. He has a doctorate in counseling psychology and is presently the coordinator of the psychology program at Aiken Technical College. He has authored 6 books, including Potential Not Pathology, Helping Your Clients Transform Using Ericksonian Psychotherapy and the Art of Creating a Magical Session, Key Elements for Transformative Psychotherapy, The Year of Living Magically, Practical Ways to Create a Life of Spirit, Wonder, and Connection, and Low Country Shamanism. So Paul is a popular trainer of mental health professionals in the areas of solution-based therapies, Ericksonian hypnosis, and creative therapy applications. And you can find him on drpaulleslie.com. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Dr. Paul Leslie.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET 1490 AM.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it. Hello, this is Dr. Fujian Zane. For all of you who are interested in changing something in your life, or shifting a new career, or bettering your intimate relationship, or, you know, it's just time to take care of you, but you really don't have time to take off from your busy day, or you're just too far away from my Beverly Hills or San Clemente office, I have a great offer for you. I'm only offering this time-limited package to you for online therapy if you are living in the state of California, or online coaching wherever you live around the world. Now listen, a 10-week package with a $500 discount. Call me to schedule your appointment, 818-648-2140, 818-648-2140, or go to Fujian.com, F-O-O-J-A-N.com, for more information. It's time to take care of you, because you are worth it.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and excited to have Dr. Paul Leslie with me. Hello.
Hi, it's good to talk to you again, my friend.
Yes, we met at the Ericksonian Congress in Arizona, and it's a pleasure to have you here. And I know you're from South Carolina. I was just telling Paul that I thought that my experience of going to South Carolina, I was there for, I think, for an AMFT conference. And everybody that I came across on the street, they would actually look at you in your eyes and say hello. And I had not had that experience anywhere else.
Well, I'm glad that happened. We work hard down here to be at least polite, if nothing else. So.
And I was told off in the most polite way, because I was driving, and obviously I'm driving in a state that I don't know, you know, anything about. So obviously, without me knowing, I pushed a car to the side because I didn't see them, and I guess I crossed them in front of them. So at a light, this woman honks, and I turn down the window, and she's very beautiful smile. She says, "Hello, I just wanted to let you know that if you ever wanted to come to my lane, please let me know before." And I said, "I think I just got told off the most beautiful way." Yeah. So that's what I call the Southern hospitality.
Indeed.
Very, very sweet. Yes. How are you doing there?
I'm doing well. We're enjoying our days and our evenings as the seasons trick us time and time again. We two days ago it was 23 degrees, then it was 70 degrees, and now it's debatable. So, but it's nice. It's a wonderful time of year, and it's great to be talking with you again.
So you're getting surprised every day by the weather.
Yes, indeed. Every day is a surprise. You know.
I know that you the word magic is all over your books. Because when I was going through the, six books that you've written, one of them as a therapist is How to Create Magic in the Session. And I was going through your book. The other one that I also found is The Year of Living Magically. So practical ways to create a life of spirit and wonder and connection. So tell me what the word magic means to you, since you keep coming to this word and utilizing it, whether it's for yourself or for your clients.
Yeah. Well, for me, magic is the way I'm using it is another way to say it would be enchantment, a feeling of enchantment, a feeling that you're connected with something out of the ordinary. I think the neuroscientist Bruce Hood calls it a super sense, that there's more going on than meets the eye, but in a good way. I think it's just a way to not just connect with the world, but to connect with ourselves, to allow ourselves to kind of be more authentic to who we are, but yet open ourselves up to possibilities we hadn't thought of, interactions that we never dreamed we'd have. All these kind of things, I think, are magical. And when one lives magically, it's like giving ourselves permission to connect to this invisible grid, if you will, that connects all of us. Because I think everybody, no matter where they're from, what part of the world they're from, they want to be a little happier, a little more connected, and to live their life on their terms. And when we give ourselves permission to do that indirectly, we give others permission to do that for themselves. And we can create these interactions, whether it's in a therapy room or just out on the street. Maybe when you run into somebody's lane, they're really polite to you, and that could be a magical moment. It's all how you see it.
And I'm sensing for me, magic, as you were talking, I was kind of also pondering, what is magic for me? And I've noticed there's a lot of what you said, connection, and the a joy that shows up with that connection suddenly. And it might be new, or it might not, it's something that I've experienced before, but it's at that moment anew. Like it shows up. It shows up at that moment as if it's new for that moment. But it's definitely a lot of that type of a connection, whether that connection is with another human being or nature or myself or an animal. It just seems like that the joy of that connection in a deep way suddenly shows up. That's how I've experienced magic in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that is a perfect way to view that. If we look at how children operate in the world, if children have not had to go through, terribly traumatic things, and they're just in their natural state of being taken care of with good enough parents, everything is magical to a child. And that particularly that time period that Piaget called our pre-operational stage, we're just magical to everything. We find a tree limb in the backyard. Well, that could be a magic wand. It could be a shotgun. It could be a wizard's cane. It could be all kinds of things. Whereas as we get older, we naturally tend to fall into a kind of more regimented ways of thinking and ways of interacting. And in order to really bring more magic into one's life, we have to get away from the patterns of how we live our lives and just kind of maybe jump into the unknown a little bit, improvise a little bit in our lives. Because, you know, discovery can only happen if there's an unknown. And so much of our life we approach as if we know all the answers, and we get anxious when we don't know all the answers. And maybe being more comfortable just saying, you know, what'll happen. Maybe also getting clear on what's really important to us. I mean, I find the biggest issue where people don't feel like they're having a magical life is that their priorities are out of sync with what's really important to them. Because we have so many messages from society and culture that tells us that we need to do certain things, we need to be certain things. And if that resonates with our innermost being, then that's fine. Unfortunately, as we've all seen, there's a lot of people who it doesn't resonate. I mean, if you think about it, in our culture, particularly the United States, there's a big push on this term success. And we debate, well, what is that really? Well, for most people, if you pick up a book in the bookstore in the self-help section, so success is, they always talk about, you know, achieving goals and maybe even making money and having more money and having more things. And that's okay. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But if that's not your highest priority in your innermost being, then you end up creating a struggle within yourself to where you're trying to answer to some outside authority that you think's really you. But it's not. I mean, where does it say in the, you know, the federal law that everyone must achieve the same kind of thing? It doesn't. So if we take a real step back, take a real look at what success means to us, we have to say, what's our highest priorities in life? If somebody's highest priority is family and spending time with their children, well, if they have been kind of hypnotized by our society and culture that they need to be spending more time at the office or making more money or working hard to pay for more things, a lot of times they feel completely disconnected from life because they're not adhering to that highest priority they have, this value that's most important to them. So part of having a magical life is saying, if that family is the most important thing, how do I structure my life to let go of some of these outside opinions that I may have picked up and stored in the back of my head and say, you know, what is it that I really want? What is it that's most important to me? What is my highest priority? What can I really have a sense of peace, contentment, but also, as you mentioned, joy. Mm-hmm. And when we allow ourselves to really examine what our priorities are, and move in that direction, it's, as Joseph Campbell said, you know, these invisible hands come to then to kind of push us kind of a little bit quicker than we expected, and doors sometimes open that we hadn't expected.
And maybe even, as you're saying, shifting the name of the success and the concept of success toward the priority, such as if I'm my priority is being a mother or my family, then that priority that I would create success elements in that and mm-hmm. not just the financial piece. I think the only place that I've seen people are not maybe feeling all magical when they are doing what they want to do, but then, like you said, they also find themselves in the essence of facing the society is the financial piece of it. I think mm-hmm. most of the success is shown up as the financial independence, let's say, or right. ease in being able to do things. But if you're doing something which to you is not necessarily making your money, mm-hmm. but it feels magical to you, maybe it's an art, maybe it's, you know, spending time, maybe, you know, with your pet. But if it's not making the money, then suddenly it goes away from the realm of the success. Mm-hmm. And to bring success into it, but also kind of like master the game of your life so that it's efficient and it takes care of you so that you get to enjoy anything right. that you want to enjoy.
Right. Yeah. One of my mentors told me years ago, pick the 5 top priorities you have in your life. Really investigate. Make sure they're really yours, not someone else's. And then find a way to delegate or eliminate all the rest. And that was something that sounds really, you know, common sense. But years ago, I didn't have that. I was trying to do everything myself. I mean, I kind of brought up that way in a good way, self-reliance and all of this. And what had happened, real briefly, is several years ago, my wife at the time just decided she wasn't happy and just decided she was going to leave. And it's not a situation I liked. And, you know, wife and children kind of exited, and I was left with all of this struggle and working on all these things, trying to do all these things. And I had to sit and say, okay, where's, you know, if that is no longer there, that this struggle that I've been doing, what else do I have? And then that clicked in my head. Well, what are my priorities? And I realized my priorities were never really in line as well as they could have been. So I said, okay, let's sit down and write these out and just really get in touch with them. So I, teaching, speaking, writing, doing therapy. Those are my some of my top five priorities. So when I decided that was what I was going to do, I figured out, well, how's a way I could just delegate things to other people? I stopped cutting my grass. I used to cut my grass. I mean, it sounds like a minor thing, but for me,
takes an hour time.
An hour of doing my highest priority, I could give money to somebody whose highest priority is to cut grass. My lawn guy was absolutely over the moon. He loved getting up at 4:30 in the morning to go around and start doing yards. To me, that sounds horrible.
Yes, but, and they do it much better than we do anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I started to align my life around those highest priorities, I started finding that a lot of the nonsense that I had been taught, or I'll take responsibility, that I had accepted about what's important to me and what I needed, it got really remarkable how, you know, I actually gave up a side job I had and lost a substantial amount of yearly income. And I found that I was actually doing okay. I wasn't rich, but my success, my inner success, allowed me to have more of a magical existence. I could do things that inspired me. And what happened is, in time, the more I did those things that inspired me, the more energy I had for those. It's like those gaps in the financial arena, the personal arena, they slowly started getting filled. And then these, using that term magical opportunities started happening. I started just talking to people, meeting people, connecting people online, all these kind of things that almost kind of was the, again, those invisible hands which pushed me further toward being more authentically me, which I think is the core of knowing ourselves, is where that magic comes from.
And I agree with you that there's, every one of us knows, if we really sat down, and I've worked with people who are saying, I don't know what I'm passionate about. And I think we don't know what we're passionate about when we've been filled with the other ideas based on our parents or society that you shouldn't be exploring what's really for you, and you should just be exploring what the society tells you, and that's what you should go. And maybe looking at what the society tells you just doesn't hold it for you. But when you really go in, you get what it is that you're excited about. And what I'm hearing from you is like honoring those and turning your life so that you could definitely put them as a priority. And when you put them as a priority, then kind of like magic begins, because you are completely zoomed in into those aspects of what makes you shine. And when you, like, what makes your soul dance, you know, and shine. And when you do that, then you are a better person, in a sense, for everyone around you, for, you know, your family members, for your friends, for the community. It's much easier to be with people who are, you know, kind of like living the magic and exuberating the magic. Mm-hmm. They actually are addictive to be around, because you get, you know, that they are into something that they really, really love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we often hear that term charisma for people. Oh, yeah. He, she's so charismatic. And there's charisma can be a put on thing, you know, like an actor and actress has to exude a type of charisma when they're in their role. But I found a lot of natural charisma, what I call quiet charisma, is I think we're all just naturally drawn to people who have a sense of contentment in themselves and feel that they are doing what they're supposed to be doing, whether it's job-wise or hobby-wise or relationally. They have this ability to kind of go with the flow of nature. You see, Western outlook doesn't really value being in line with nature. It tends to want to dominate nature. we want to say where man conquers nature. But we find when we see that the nature has seasons, but so do human beings have seasons. I'm entering into the, I'm here in midlife. And so, you know, and one part of me is like, oh my God, what happened? Something disappeared, not just the back of my hair on the back of my head. You know, where did your life go? But then it's like, well, there's beautiful things that come out in fall. And so when we are in line with that, knowing that we will eventually end and then go back to the earth and then become this process of renewal. And it's like life in general. Our phases of our life ends. They feel like death. I mentioned divorce or loss of a job. They can feel like the end. But if we look at this from, we're mentioning magic, but like alchemy, you know, all these great alchemists in the Middle Ages were trying to create gold. If we look at that, as I think Carl Jung did, as a metaphor, that our life is slowly, old life is slowly dying. And when we allow that life to die so that something can be reborn, that we are more in line and understanding of our true priorities and who we are, we're constantly in this state of creation, destruction, creation, destruction. And when we align ourselves with how nature flows, instead of trying to conquer our lives or conquer Mother Nature, it's like that that old song when I was a kid, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream.
Yes.
And I think there's a lot of wisdom there. First of all, the line is row, row, row your boat. You know, don't row my boat. Don't row the neighbor's boat, your sister's boat, your boss's boat. But then it's like when we find that flow in life, when we're really lined up with our priorities, that's when the magic happens. And it is a flow. But as Westerners and particularly Americans, which I love American, I'm proud to be an American, but gosh, are we some overstressed, hardworking people. I had a colleague of mine from Ireland who came and lived in New York for a couple of years. And when he moved back, he said, I told everyone, you know, it's absolutely true what they say about the Americans. They're all just work themselves to death. You know? And it's true. We do. For what? And if we are doing work that inspires us, it's amazing the amount of energy we can gain to work, and we can work 15 hours and not be tired.
Doesn't feel like work.
Yeah, exactly. But we need to be understanding where's our priority. Because if we're doing work that we don't feel a sense of connection, that there's no meaning, there's no magic to, then if we're just for the time being stuck doing that, we need to find that meaning, magic, and priority in other areas of our life. So keep the day job, nothing wrong with that, but where can you live a magical life outside of work? Maybe it's more with your family. Maybe it's more doing research in an area you're inspired by, but we have to be clear on what those are.
So when you look at, I'm sure you work with your clients that, they get bogged down in a system that they've created in their head. And when I was looking at your book about, which is geared towards the therapist and teaching the therapist, but it was more like, look at the framing that we look at from a window that all of us look at life. And we get caught into that frame. Right. And we forget what magic looks like. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even when we have kids and watch them create anything, magic out of anything, we even might call it like, oh, this is silly. You just don't know when you grow up, you have to deal with all of the issues that are at hand. And somehow we put maybe play and fun and ease into stuff in one realm, which would be called magic. And then the rest of life is work, serious mm-hmm. stuff. You know, having to pay bills and having to deal with issues. And somehow we kind of like separate these two, you know, put them in different categories. And it's like, I have to work 15 hours a day, suffer through it all and do everything. And then if I have time, I'll have play. And once in a while, I might get lucky to have some magic. Mm-hmm. So it's like how to incorporate those concepts and, you know, get the frame a little bit larger, which it actually has all of them together and an encompassing life of magic at anything, even if you're paying bills.
Right.
Can you create magic out of that?
Yeah, I think let's use the kind of a magical term or a phrase. Somebody's put a spell on you. So the spell is either been society, culture, but most of the time it's ourselves. And when we put a spell on ourselves, what we've done is we've created a category of our experience. And when we have a spell, it's usually of limitations. Now, the only way to break a spell is to do something totally different. So if somebody has a spell that they can't do a certain thing that they want to do, you know, a therapist will try to, you know, okay, let's work on your thoughts. You know, what are your beliefs about this, which is great. Okay, well, how can we like maybe gradually ease you into doing whatever it is, you know, so you don't get too overwhelmed. And that's wonderful stuff. But at the same time, what if you or anyone who is finds themselves, and we all do inside these frames, just did something radically different to change a pattern? So, for example, if somebody is every day is a drudgery at work, what if they said, I'm going to have a little more magic in my life? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually create a spell that no one else knows. And in my desk drawer, I'm going to have a little doll that's not a voodoo doll of the boss, but maybe it's a doll that represents my new life that I want to live. And make it fun, make it silly, and breaking a little bit of these patterns. Because reality is pretty flexible, I'm finding, the older I get. And this invisible filter that we see the world through is really these kind of categories that we've set up for ourselves. I can't tell you how many times, and I know you have heard this too, where a client or friend or somebody says, well, I could never do that. Mm-hmm. And what we find is if it's not the against the laws of nature, like gravity, yeah, we could do all kinds of things. It's like I had a lady tell me one time that she wanted to start this little business. It was a dream of hers. And she said, I just can't do that. I've got to come up with, I'll just say it's $10,000. And we conjectured that what if somebody kidnapped her daughter and she had to come up with $10,000 or her daughter would be killed? She said, well, I would come up with that money pretty quick. I said, so this is really a frame that you've set up for yourself of how you see the world, that something unexpected has come in and now suddenly you're able to do, you know, this kind of thing. So it's almost like she could have found the money magically rather than, you know, this hypnosis of limitation that she had set up and created the spell that she was under.
And that doesn't even have to be a lot. I remember talking to someone where they were very harsh in their way of speaking to their husband and to their children. And I get it. And we talked about where does it show up. And it was like a multi-generational conversation that she had heard her own mother talk to her that way. And, you know, everybody in her family talked that way. So it just kind of like ingrained. Mm-hmm. So as easy as putting this into a very like respectful wordings, you know, can you say the same thing in this way? Can you say it in a respectful way and request what you want? And she looked at me and she said, I can't do that. That's just too weird. Mm-hmm. So we're talking closing ourselves in so much that even things that we know and we've been doing, like conversing, using words and all of that, but you just change the dynamic of it. And for us who are very a closed system, mm-hmm. and not opening ourselves to anything new, we'll probably shut down and think we can't do it. Right. And most of the time in that type of rigidity, magic has no place, like mm-hmm. joy has no place. Because like you said, everything is known. And then we might go into a short-term joy of maybe if I eat, you know, this good cheesecake, maybe I'll have mm-hmm. joy a little bit. But we keep going back to the same concept, but then we stay in this closed system that we can't get out. Mm-hmm. So part of what I'm hearing from you as far as how to live a magical life is to open these doors and trust that you get to enjoy and be with something that will feel real to you. And in that way, you're going to experience another type of a joy and magic.
Right. And as you said, if it's a closed system, I mean, just basic a biology about closed systems is that no new information can get in. So all we can do is perturb the system rather than trying to get information in. And, you know, for example, I had a couple who could not fathom not fighting the other day. Just like just constant, their whole relationship has been based on fighting. So just having them do things instead of stop fighting, that they could only fight in the bathroom if the husband had taken all his clothes and laid in the tub and the wife had to sit on the toilet with her clothes on. That's the only place they could fight. So we didn't alter the information, really. It's just we kind of perturbed the system. And it's amazing how quickly they were able to find a way to stop arguing so much. So we've broken the spell. So we just need to figure out first how we've, you know, what spells we've been under, how we got under them, and then to do little things to break the pattern. So sometime in your day, do something unexpected, something that you don't expect. Magic happens when we're surprised. It's not when, as we've been talking about, it's the same old thing. So here's a quick story. My best friend William has this thing he loves to do when he goes to the grocery store, because when you come up the grocery store and the person, the clerk or whoever, or the cashier says, "How are you doing today?" And when everyone says, "Fine," right?
Yes.
My friend William says, "Sober." and it's like it interrupts this pattern, this trance that people are in. He says, "But I get the best service at that point," and then they start to smile. And it's like his whole day is about interrupting these little patterns. So they're having moments of magic. Ooh, you got to connect with somebody who had said something that you never heard before if you were the cashier. So I encourage anybody, find little ways to do fun, safe, but strange things, because that's where you find out, you know, what you're made of. You say, okay, I've never done it this way, but why not? Let's play with it a little bit.
And you use a lot of sense of humor. I remember meeting you at in Arizona at the Erickson conference. And one of the things that I remember about you was the concept of humor. Like any, you know, we went to a book signing event and we were at the conference, and then you came to my talk. I came to your talk, and I remember a lot of the thing that it stayed with me. It was your use of humor in any realm that you could. Now, some of the humor was light. Some of it was, you know, you were having fun with some of our other colleagues, and you know, you would do sarcastic remarks. It was just different types of humors that kept right. showing up, and that also creates magic.
Yeah, someone asked me, "Who are your biggest influences?" and psychotherapy, in addition to people like Milton Erickson and others, I always list Groucho Marx and Don Rickles, because they have had just as much impact on me. Because humor, as you well know, when you add a little humor to anything, it changes. It's like you have this wonderful recipe, and when you add or subtract something, it changes the recipe. So when you add humor to anything, it just makes it better. It's like the whipped topping on, I have three different pies or cakes. It doesn't matter, because it's good with most everything, as long as it's, you know, respectful and all that. Right. But yeah, humor to me is the gateway to living my magic. I love being funny. I love hearing people who are funny. And I think that so many of the dark times in my life, it's been humor that's helped me. And just getting my clients to sometimes just laugh at little absurdities of life, because life is incredibly absurd. I remember the great comedian Red Skelton said one time, "Don't worry about this, because none of us are getting out of this thing alive anyway."
That's true. And I found that basically it's much easier for me to listen to the news through the late night TV hosts, mm-hmm. because it, you know, when I just listen to the news, I feel frightened. It's like, mm-hmm. the world is coming to the end. And then you hear it through the late night comedians, and it just takes another way, which is, we've been here before. History is going to repeat itself. We're just going to go through this and pass this, and you know, we'll all survive it somehow. Or we don't, and we're done. Yeah. You know, and then that's another magic that shows up. But putting this lens of humor into things, it doesn't mean that we're minimizing it or taking it lightly. It just means, like you said, you should put a nice whipped cream on top, and that's what, you know, makes it fun.
Right.
What else is magic? How do you create magic all day for yourself?
I just think, again, if you've aligned yourself with what's really important to you, this thing happens automatically. I found that the more we release our stress about accumulation of things, again, this is kind of more of a Western culture. It's like we've only become successful unless we've accumulated a lot of stuff. Just seeing how much you really need, and are you accumulating what's really important to you? You know, you may want to have, several wonderful, beautiful cars, and that's fine and wonderful as long as you want it. So if you're putting your energy and time in accumulating things that aren't important to you, you're not going to feel very magical. Maybe for me, what's magical to me is going to an old bookshop and going through and blowing off the dust and finding just even just one old book for, $1.50 that I can take home and I get something out of. That's a magical experience. But everybody's different. Some people it's holding their baby. Some people it's making a nice cupcake, whatever.
I think for me, it has been slowing down for a minute to really just connect with another human being, whether it's my husband or it's, one of my clients or one of my friends. Because I think that even relatedness, sometimes it just goes into those structures. You know, I come in, I do what I got to do. I have the conversations I got to have. And then, I'm done with that conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's not, even the communication or the relatedness sometimes becomes the chore of it versus the connection of it. And I've really found that magic to be in that certain connection when I'm with people. So it's like I yearn for that connection throughout the day. And every time I create it, then magic happens like that.
Yeah.
1 minute before Sean tells us we're done, something that we haven't talked about and you really, really want our listeners to know about you.
Other than my incredible good looks and modesty, I would say I have some wonderful books that I worked really hard on. I think some folks, whether they're therapists or not, may enjoy them. And please check out my website, drpaulleslie.com, DrPaulLeslie. And thank you for bringing magic, because you every week you bring magic to your listeners, and I appreciate what you do to make the world a better place.
Thank you. And thank you for being on the show and bringing your magic to the show. And I hope to get to see you again at one of these conferences. So it's been a pleasure to have you in my show.
Oh, it's a delight, my friend. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And for everyone out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. You deserve it. And we'll see you next week right here. Take care.